I introduced a simplified functional, a toy model. So I just would like to remind you what this model was. So we had two wave functions, and we had an energy which was equal to this integral. So sum k going from 1 to 2 of phi k plus square root of 1 minus Laplacian phi k plus minus phi k minus square root of 1 minus Laplacian phi k minus, where phi, each phi k splits as phi k plus phi k minus, okay, minus z over x, z alpha, alpha z over x, phi 1, phi, so we had a, yeah, phi k squared, so it's this sum, sum over k of these terms, and then we had a plus alpha double integral phi 1 of x squared phi 2 of y squared over x minus y. So this mimics the electronic repulsion term, and this is for the electron nucleus attraction, and this is for the free energies. And so each phi k splits as phi k plus phi k minus. It's just a splitting in the var 2 in R and R. And integral of phi k squared is 1 for each k. So what we did last time is that we replaced this functional. So we are looking for critical points of this functional, but we under these constraints, but we replaced this variational problem by another one by just changing, so relaxing the constraints, okay, replacing them by inequalities, and subtracting a penalization term, which is so the penalization term should be put here because for it's a sum over k going from 1 to 2 of this so write it this way, okay, minus phi k in L2 to the power p, to, so in L2 to the power 2p over 1 minus phi k in L2 to the square. Okay? Okay, that was the expression of the functional. So I explained that if you can find critical points of fp, and if you take p going to infinity, and if the sequence of critical point is convergent, then in fact it converges to a solution of the real the exact equations with the exact constraints, integral of phi k squared equal 1. Then I said that in order to deal with the problem of infinite Morse indices, and I remind you that these problems come from this term, okay, so in order to get rid of this problem, what we do is that we identify the negative, in some sense we identify an infinity of negative directions, and these directions will be identified with the second component. So the idea is to see that the functional here is concave with respect to the negative parts of psi k. And in fact, I should say that this, so I call this a Lyapunov, I call this a Lyapunov-Schmidt reduction. So it's a it's so reduction. What you see is that you have a concavity. So if alpha is less than, so if 2 alpha is less than 2 over pi, then you have phi 1 minus phi 2 minus 2fp of phi 1 phi 2, which is strictly concave. And then you can define IP of phi 1 plus phi 2 plus as a supremum over phi 1 minus phi 2 minus of fp. Okay? Okay, this is not... this method of Lyapunov-Schmidt reduction is well known, so I can quote several authors who introduced this method a long time ago. So I think probably, I don't know if I'm right, but I think that probably the first paper where this appears is a paper by Amann. There's also a paper by Castro Lazer. I'm wrong. So it starts with Castro Lazer, Amann, and maybe I forget people, so please tell me if I forget some people. And then there's a paper by Buffoni and Jean-Jean, which is in, and Jean-Jean, which is independent of these ones. And in this case, I think it was applied to elliptic PDEs, and there was not really an infinite Morse index to deal with. But here it was really to get rid of of problems with strongly indefinite functionals. So it's 93. So I'm correct with quotations. I think this is about the is it correct? It's, okay, I hope I forget nobody. Lyapunov, maybe. Here's the story of this Lyapunov-Schmidt reduction. So now we and in fact we took the ideas from here. So now we want to to find critical points of this reduced functional, which will automatically give critical points of FP. It's not a trivial task, in fact. So I'm going to cheat a little bit. So you are used to it. I already cheated by changing the true functional by a simplified one. So I'm going to do something worse. Okay. You see, when you write IP, since you have a strict concavity, in fact, there is a unique maximizer here. So you can write that IP of say capital phi plus, if I call capital phi plus a collection of phi 1 plus phi 2 plus, I can say that this is in fact the value of fp at phi plus and some phi minus, which is in fact a unique function which depends on phi plus. So you can write something like that. So HP is the maximizer. HP of phi plus is the maximizer of this maximization problem. Now I'm going to cheat a little bit. You know, I'm not cheating yet, but I'm going to cheat. So you see, of course, you have this. Okay? If I put 0, 0 is in my class, so this is bigger than this. Okay? Now, I'm going to write the min-max for this simplified thing. And I ask you to believe me that when you add this this term, which is in some sense nasty because it's non-linear, if you add this term, then things work the same. But you have more estimate to do. Okay, and I don't want to do it here. Okay. Okay. So if I do that, let me write. So let me call this IP tilde. Okay. So what is IP tilde? Well, it's just the integral of the sum over k of phi k plus square root of minus Laplacian phi k plus, I have no phi k minus now, minus alpha z over x phi k plus squared, okay, plus alpha integral of phi 1 plus of x squared phi 1 plus phi 2 plus of y squared over x minus y. So now you see that this is a nice functional. It is not strongly indefinite anymore. It has a positive definite leading term. And the other terms, well, this one is positive and this one is negative, but by Hardy's inequality, this term is smaller than this term. Okay, so it's really like... it's almost like the Hartree-Fock functional. Okay, it's a little bit worse than the Hartree-Fock functional because this is not a compact perturbation of this. But apart from that, we are in good. We are really in good shape. Okay, and you can see also that you have this nice property that, in fact, it's a quadratic form in phi 1. Okay, plus a term which depends only on phi 2, and which is, in fact, phi 2 square root of 1 minus Laplacian minus alpha z over x, phi 2. Okay, scalar product in L2. Well, it's not really L2, but I mean it's integral. Okay, maybe I should do it like this. Mm-hmm. Okay, so here you have phi 1. This property is that, in fact, if you freeze phi 2 plus, then you have a quadratic form in phi 1 plus, and the remainder is only a function of phi 2, and in fact, in our case, it's a quadratic form also in phi 2. Okay? Phi 2 plus, okay. So now that my phi 1 plus and phi 2 plus satisfy this. Okay, and in fact there are maps from R3 to R. And they are in H1 half. Okay. So now we have to do some topology, well, some very elementary topology, but we have to find a topological argument, a topological reason why there should be critical points of this IP tilde. Okay, so one can think of the space. Well, of the, we are in an open subset of a functional space. We can think of this open subset as a square. Okay. So here I draw the phi 1 plus direction. Here I draw the phi 2 plus direction. And okay, we are just looking at the product of two unit balls, but there's no red chalk, but okay, so this, sorry? No, they are white. Thank you. So this is forbidden, okay, because the integral is strictly bigger than zero, and also this is forbidden. So in fact, of course, this picture is completely wrong because it gives you the idea that you have four connected components, but we are in infinite dimensions, so even in higher and finite dimensions, we have only one connected component for this, of course. Now what do you see? Well, in fact, there are two kinds of boundaries here. This boundary, and this boundary. Okay? Now, this boundary is nice. It's the easiest boundary to look at because, I forgot the penalization, okay, which is, of course, extremely important. So it's there, okay? So it's there, it's minus. So once again, I put the integrals in the bad order. So sum of these integrals minus, yes, phi k in L2 to the 2p over 1 minus phi k squared in L2. Okay? So this stands for norm of phi 1 squared equal to 1. And when you approach this boundary, well, this penalization term converges to infinity. Okay, because of this. So here, you have minus infinity on all these boundaries for the values of the functional. Okay? So we start to get the idea that maybe there is some mountain here and maybe there is a critical point. But of course, we want to avoid also this region. So it would be nice if we also had minus infinity or, say, some negative value here. So let us see what if this is true. Well, you see, for instance, if we look at this segment, then it means that phi 1 plus is 0, so we just have this quadratic form, and it doesn't work because this quadratic form is non-negative. Okay, so we cannot say that we have something negative or minus infinity here, but then we are going to use another idea that is also, a standard idea. The idea is to look instead. I mean, if you don't have good information on the values of the functional, then maybe you have good information on how the gradient of the functional behaves near the boundary. And the trick is to see that when you are near the boundary, in fact, if you take a small neighborhood of this boundary that you want to avoid, the gradient of the functional points inward. Okay? And, the idea of looking at this this gradient and checking that it points inward is inspired by works of Conley-Zender. In fact, Conley-Zender, for instance, proved the existence of solutions to the Arnold conjecture, well, proved the Arnold conjecture using such an idea of taking an open set and checking that the gradient points in the good directions, the boundary, and also works by Mayer and Mayer-Terracini. on the n-body problem. So this is a well-known method, and it's when it works, it's very it works very well. In our case, things are okay because you see, you look once again. So now you don't look at this. You look at this. You see, for instance, let me explain why the gradient points inward on this region. Okay. So how do I define this region? Suppose that norm of phi 1 plus is some epsilon positive small. Okay? Then if I write I prime p of phi 1 plus phi 2 plus, and I make a scalar product with phi 1 plus. Okay. Since I have a quadratic form here, it's immediate that I get twice this quadratic form. Okay. And by Hardy's inequality, this quadratic form is strictly positive. Okay, since its leading order term is this one with k equal 1, and the other ones are controlled. Well, in fact, the other one is this one, which is controlled using the Hardy inequality. Well, in fact, the Kato inequality. So this is strictly positive. So it means that if you increase, what is this? This is just the derivative of IP tilde in the direction, in this direction. Okay, when I just multiply phi 1 plus by a scalar greater than 1, I'm going to increase the values of the functional. So it really says that the gradient points inward. Okay? It's here that I'm cheating when I use this functional I tilde. Because if I use a real functional IP, then I have to control how the negative part behaves. Okay, and there are some messy computations, but it works. It works also for the real functional. So I have a gradient which points inward, and now it's not very surprising to expect that there should be a critical point of the functional somewhere in there. Okay, you have some mountain. So you can make things precise in the following way. So you can define a functional JP, which is just IP. So it's one way of using this fact. But there are other ways of seeing this, but I'm going to do it that way. So I define this and I take this functional, and beta is a map. Beta is a map which is like this up to epsilon, and then from epsilon to zero it behaves exactly like I'm wrong. I should put a plus sign here. Okay, so it's another penalization term, if you wish. So if I define this functional, then you see that when I approach now the cross here, the functional will converge to minus infinity because of the beta. Okay, so now I have changed my functional to a functional which is really minus infinity on the boundary of the domain I'm interested in. Of course, what one might say is, okay, you have changed your functional, but maybe you have a new functional which has critical points, which have nothing to do with the critical points of the initial functional. But since we have this property that the gradient points inward, and in fact, we can make it more precise and show that the critical points of JP are the same as the critical points of IP. You do not add any additional critical points when you change this functional. The reason is IP equals JP as long as you are not inside this domain here, which is defined by the equation phi 1 squared times phi 2 squared less than epsilon squared. Okay, so these are hyperbolas, if you wish. So as long as you are not in this domain, the function is coincided. And now when you are in this domain, you can show that the gradient of IP is strictly positive, has a strictly positive scalar product with the gradient of this functional. Okay, that's really the property of pointing inward. Okay, so if phi 1 squared times phi 2 squared is less than epsilon, then you have that gradient of IP of phi plus scalar, so it's a gradient in H1 half, okay, scalar gradient of beta of phi 1 squared phi 2 squared is positive. And the computation is exactly this one. Okay, when you compute this scalar product, you really get this term times beta prime. Okay, so and this term is positive. So I haven't added any critical points in the region where the functionals are not the same, so I can study this functional instead. Okay, and now all what is left is to construct a suitable min-max, and the min-max is the following. So you take maps from the square, so the square in R2, so the square in R2 with values in in omega, and I should say what is omega. Omega is exactly my collection of functions, so I should say it's just unit ball squared, but you take only functions in H1 half. Okay, so it's really my domain. The open unit ball, and you forbid the 0 points, so it's the square I wrote before. And I consider continuous maps from 0, 1 squared to omega such that gamma of 0 has the first component which is 0 and the second component which is in the ball, gamma of dot 0 is in there, gamma of dot of 1 dot, so gamma of 1 dot belongs to the unit sphere in L2 across the ball, So, well, it's not the unit sphere, it's 1 minus delta times. No, that's it. Yeah. Yeah, and here I should put the closure. Okay. So this square, it's really something. So if you recall this omega I wrote before, this square is really a square which covers. Say some two-dimensional non-trivial plane from the point of view of homotopy in omega. Okay, so here you have the conditions. So your square should have the first component which is zero when you start with the first component in the small square which is zero. So okay. So I hope it's okay. So we have this idea of finding a two-dimensional min-max. It's not difficult to see that we have the correct assumptions to apply standard min-max theorems. Okay, so it's not a mountain pass, but it's just a class above the mountain pass. So we can write a linking property we can define sigma, which is a class of phi 1 plus phi 2 plus, which are in H1 half, so squared, since it's a couple, and such that phi 1, so I should call it sigma delta, phi k plus is equal to delta, to 1 minus delta in normal, in L2 norm for k equal 1 and 2. So you see you have two equations. And now what I claim is that for any gamma in this class, there is the intersection between the image of gamma and sigma is non-empty. Okay, and delta is positive and small. So my claim, so it's the topological argument is there, it's very simple. My claim is for any gamma in capital gamma, the image of gamma intersects sigma. And the proof is just by degree theory. I mean, it's a very, very elementary thing. You have a map. So you the proof is really a game. So you consider the map which associates to ST in the square. You associate a norm of gamma. You can write gamma as gamma 1, gamma 2, okay, since its image consists of two functions, phi 1 plus, phi 2 plus. So and you consider the map which associates to each ST, gamma 1 of ST, gamma 2 of ST, in norm. Now you have a map which has the following values on the square. Here it's 0 and something. No, it's here. Here it's 0 and something. Here it's something and 0. Here it's 1 and something, and here it's something and 1. And you want to find a point such that the value of the functional is 1 minus delta, 1 minus delta. So by elementary degree theory, there's always a solution to this problem. Okay? Now, so this tells you that the inf for gamma and capital gamma of the supremum over gamma of JP, is it JP? Yeah, I called it JP okay. This is strictly bigger than the infimum of JP over sigma delta. Okay, but now if you take P large enough, then this is, it's not difficult to check that this is strictly positive, because it consists of a part which is, once again, this square root of y minus Laplacian, which is the leading term. Then you have the, the terms which are controlled by Hardy's inequality, and the penalization terms converges to zero, because you are the norm of the points I consider is strictly less than one. Okay, so now I can call this CP, okay, and I can find critical points. It's not completely over. I can find Palis-Mayer sequence, sorry, at level CP. Mm-hmm. So. There is a Palis-Mayer sequence at level CP, a Palis-Mayer sequence, of course, for my functional J, but for I, in fact, for so it's for IP, because as I told you, the critical points of IP and GP are the same, and also the Palis-Mayer sequences one can check.
The value might change.
No, because you see, when you are in the region when they are not the same, there are no critical points and no Palis-Mayer sequences. So you are necessarily here. Okay. Somewhere here. So there's a Palis-Mayer sequence at level CP. Now, in fact, it's not easy to prove that a Palis-Mayer sequence for this functional converges. Well, in fact, I think it's not true. So it's really not obvious, since it's wrong. So you have to add something, and this thing is the Morse information I told you about at the beginning. The reason why you have to add this information is that what is a Palis-Mayer sequence? It means that H phi n 2, for instance, phi n 1 minus a multiplier. Well, it's not a multiplier. In fact, it's this EP of it's EP of phi 1 n squared, but it's a scalar, so you can call it epsilon p n. Epsilon 1 n times phi 1 n converges to zero in h minus 1/2. Okay. If you want to prove convergence of phi 1 n, then you really need that the epsilon 1 n is outside the essential spectrum of this operator. If it's in the essential spectrum, then usually there should not be convergence. Okay, so you need to control these terms even for the Palis-Mayer sequence, not only for the critical points. So there we use there we use a result by Fang and Busu, which says that you have in fact critical points, Alice may sequences with Morse type information. And what is this Morse type information? It is that if you take the second derivative of I tilde P, okay, and so you take it as the sequence phi n plus, okay, and you add call it lambda n times the identity. If this has at most two negative eigenvalues, for some sequence lambda n which converges to zero. So this lemma can be obtained by a general result due to Fang and Busu. Okay. For critical points, when you have Palis Mail, it was already known by many papers. There are many papers on that, that you can find critical points with Morse index at most two. But for Palis Mail sequence, it's more delicate. So, now once you have this Palis Mail sequence, then you get, by the same trick I explained at the beginning, so during the second lecture, I think, you can easily get an estimate. So you have a corollary, which is that EP of phi k plus squared, so this the Lagrange there's an n, okay, the eigenvalues, the solutions of the approximate eigenvalues are in some interval, 0, say m, where m is strictly less than 1. So they are bounded away from the essential spectrum. You see the essential spectrum of h phi k plus looks like this. You don't have any negative part because you have killed it using the Lyapunov-Schmidt reduction, but you still have this. Okay, so what we are saying is that you leave your epsilons live in there. Okay? And this gives you compactness. Okay. And then it's the end of the story. You pass to the limit, you get a critical point of IP, and then give you a critical point of FP, and then you take P going with estimates, okay, with estimates and the eigenvalues. I should say that the estimate here is independent of everything, okay? It's independent of P, it's independent of N. And then, so you pass to the limit and you get a solution of our toy problem. Okay. What I should say, but I really don't have time to do it, is that so now if you come back to the real Dirac Fock problem, you can study the limit, a non-relativistic limit, in the same spirit as Maria said for the linear case, and you can prove that in some sense the Hartree-Fock model is the limit of the Dirac Fock model in when the speed of light goes to infinity, and we can prove that our solutions do converge to solutions of Hartree-Fock in this limit, and that one of our solutions converges to the ground state of Hartree Fock. So in this way, we can define a ground state for Dirac Fock, even if Dirac Fock has no minimum. Okay, but using this Lyapunov-Schmidt reduction, well, it's a little bit as if the functional had some kind of minimum. Okay, so for the preceding lectures, each time I have been, I have taken a few minutes more, so today I will stop before the end. And thank you very much. Okay, so in the original problem, there was this concavity, that's right, but the problem is that the constraints were not convex. What you mean by the original problem is Dirac Fock itself, right?
With the penalization, with an appropriate
penalization. Without penalization?
With the penalization.
Oh, so sorry, what do you call the original problem now? Can you repeat your...
You keep the first penalization, but talking about this
You use the Lyapunov-Schmidt to look at it as a new problem. If you don't use the Lyapunov-Schmidt,
yes,
the problem, the previous stage, with an appropriate equalization.
Oh, yes, okay. So yes, I should have talked about it. So, in fact, that's exactly what Eric Paturel did. Okay, so what Paturel did, I gave his theorem. His theorem was the same as our theorem, but without solutions. Okay, that's what he did. We assumed this, he did not. Okay, why did we assume this? That's because when you want to prove that the functional is concave with respect to the negative directions, you have to compute its second derivative, and you have nasty terms that can only be controlled under this assumption. So, and it's really bad, because it's not physical. So, what Eric Paturel did, he did not assume this, so there was no concavity, but then he worked with the strongly indefinite functional, and he made another Lyapunov-Schmidt reduction, which is the one of which is used by Cohn-Lesander. I mean, what he does is that so it's a little bit technical, because first, instead of working in R3, he considers a periodized problem, so he works in big boxes of size L, so boxes in R3, okay? So he considers a periodic problem, so he has his nucleus in the middle, in the center of the big square, the big cube, and he supposed that he has periodicity. So now he has a functional which is which satisfies Palles-Meil, and the functions of this functional space can be expanded using Fourier series. Okay, and now he proves that he can express for a solution, he can express the high frequency components. Parts as functions of the low frequency components. That's really what is done in Cohn-Lesander's papers. And then he ends up with a problem in finite dimension, which is indefinite, and he can do everything. His min max is more complicated, of course. It's a min max where the number of negative directions goes to infinity as the size of his cube goes to infinity, but he can do it using complicated estimates. So it works, yes, yes. So the Lyapunov-Schmidt reduction is just here to simplify the method.
We stop the game at 10 o'clock.